Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant friends. Welcome to episode 81 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you've been having a wonderfully planty month. It has been a few weeks since I've released an episode, and that's because if you saw on Instagram, Billy and I went on vacation to the most planty resort, the W Punta de Mita in Mexico. And big news, but while we were there, Billy proposed and we are engaged. So it has been a whirlwind couple of weeks for the Fiala Morrissey household. We are so excited, and I am so excited to plan the most plantiest wedding out there. I am open to planty suggestions. If you have ideas of planty venues in the Northeast, we would love to get married in a greenhouse, but I'm struggling to find one that works in the Northeast, ideally in New York or Connecticut. Or if you have planty ideas for how to bring my passion for houseplants to a wedding, I want to hear from you. So I'm going to be posting a lot about planty wedding stuff, and just we have these beautiful engagement photos on Instagram. So I'll be asking your advice in the comment section. So make sure to migrate over there and even just see the pretty pictures. The hotel is basically in the jungle, which is full of tropical plants, and there's a beach. So I say it's like where the jungle meets the sea, and Billy grew up in Cape Cod, so the sea is very important to him, and obviously tropical plants are very important to me. So it was a very special place to get engaged and spend a dream of a week. Several of you have asked to hear more about Billy and my love story and the engagement story. So we're kind of going back and forth about whether that's interesting information for you or not. So let us know if you want us to maybe do like an extra podcast episode or maybe a YouTube video of telling you the whole thing, because it's been a really wild week and we very intentionally stayed off of social media the week where we were in Mexico just to really disconnect and drop in with each other, which I cannot recommend enough for all of you guys. I know we are all loving hashtag plant friends IRL. We're all loving the online community of plant friends, but man, it was unbelievable to just disconnect for a full week. We stayed off our phones. We left our phones in the hotel room and really just reminded ourselves of how to be present with one another. And it was really interesting how itchy we were in those first couple of days to like be on our phones, and how we needed to really actively not be, which, I mean, I could just wax on about my feelings about social media and technology and screens in a separate podcast, but also that doesn't have to do with houseplants. So we'll see. Anyway, we're engaged. We're so excited. Let me know all of your tips and tricks on wedding planning, because I am already overwhelmed and we're 1 week in. So that's the biggest announcement for you guys. I'm so excited to bring today's episode with Leslie Halleck to you on Roots, but just a couple of more housekeeping things. Make sure you're subscribed to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show. This month, we're releasing a lot of really awesome videos. My, I guess, media YouTube manager, Chelsea, who lives in Canada, was in New York, and she came to my apartment and we filmed a tour of my grow lights. So if you're interested in getting a grow light, I show you all of my grow lights in my apartment in one. We have a Wally Grow update, which is live on the YouTube channel this week, which shows you my Wally Grow wall and how it gets installed if you're curious about how to use Wally Grow. And we have a couple of other awesome videos hitting the feed, the YouTube feed this month. So make sure click on the link in the show notes and go subscribe, because we've got some great stuff coming up. Also, that leads me to my other thing. If you guys saw on Instagram last week, I released chapter 2 of Maria's Favorite Things. So last year I did a podcast episode called Maria's Favorite Things, and it was a product review of all the planty products that I've been loving to use as a source of inspiration for you guys. If you have plant friends that you are buying gifts for, or if maybe you have someone in your life who you want to be more of a plant person and you wanted to maybe give them an introductory plant gifts, and also a list of stuff that you guys might want to request for your holiday lists for your loved ones to get you. And people loved it so much that we did another version of it, but this year it's a blog. The link is in the show notes of the podcast, and it's also a YouTube video. So on the YouTube video, I'm actually showing you all of the products so you can kind of interact with the products and see them and not just hear me talking about them. Because I really just looked around my apartment at what products I'm consistently using in our home on a daily basis, and I'm basically recommending them to you. So you can check the link in the show notes for that video and that blog, and we have like insane discounts for almost every product. It's also a great kind of compilation of just all of our sponsor discount codes, because we have crazy discount codes for so many of these products. And I feel like sometimes they get lost in the shuffle if you don't listen to that exact episode where the code is released. So that's a great kind of resource for you guys to hopefully make your holiday shopping a little easier. And as we go into the holiday season, Plant Friends, I just hope that you have wonderfully planty, love-filled holidays, and there's not too much stress, because I just think it's so easy to get so stressed out this time of year. And with the year closing in, I know for me personally, I just get into comparison mode and what I should have done this year and what I was hoping to do versus what I did. And it's just a really easy spiral. So I'm wishing you all calm, tranquil, loving holidays with the people that matter the most to you. So Leslie Hallett comes back today to talk about roots, and it is an amazing conversation. It's the topic that I was most excited to cover on season four, because I feel like we spend so much time thinking about the above the soil portions of these plants that we know and love. And it's really all going on in the roots. It's all going on in the root system. And as we all know, the number one cause of plant death is root rot because of overwatering. So Leslie, as always, gives us such an amazing breakdown of what roots are, the different types of roots, why they do the things they do, what are the hairs on them, what is an aerial root. We just have an amazing conversation. Definitely listen through the entire conversation. It's a long one, but I could have talked to her for another hour on this topic. And towards the end of the episode, Leslie answers a bunch of Patreon Plant Friends questions, which are really helpful. And I just learned a lot from the whole episode. So make sure you listen all the way through. And speaking of Patreon, holy moly, we have had so many new Patreon Plant Friends. As I was disconnected in Mexico, in the off chance that I did accidentally open my email, so many of you guys came in while we were kind of unplugged and really enjoying ourselves. So thank you. Thank you for supporting me in all moments of my life. I love you guys. So to our newest members, Gina Jillian, Amber Bryan, Jermaine, Jen Chan, Megan Parrish, Ann Larson, Renee Salwa, Angela, Rebecca DiLiberto, Hannah Kangengeiter, I hope I pronounced that right, and my friend in Arizona, Becca De La Plants. You guys are amazing. Thank you for supporting me. I'm kind of overwhelmed at how many of you guys have just shown up for me this early holiday season. If you guys are interested in supporting the podcast monetarily and getting the password to our Facebook group, you can check the link in the show notes to become part of our Patreon Plant Friend community. Oh, you guys are amazing, and I am so thankful. So before I bring back one of our favorite plant lady horticulturists that I love, I want to talk to you about one of today's episode sponsors who I love, Wally Grow. Thank you, Wally Grow, for supporting today's episode. Plant Friends, if you are interested in vertical gardening or making a green wall in your urban jungle apartment or home, you gotta look no further than Wally Grow and the Wally Grow ecosystem. So Wally Grow is an American-made company on a mission to make your vertical gardening ridiculously easy and environmentally friendly for plant people around the world. So last year, I was scrolling Instagram, I was scrolling Pinterest, and obsessed with the idea of having a vertical green wall in our apartment, our living room. There was this one area of our living room where there were no plants because our couch was there, and I thought, how cool would it be to have a green wall that was ombre from light green to dark green in plants? And that is when I found Wally Grow. And I got six of the Wally Grow Eco Pockets, and I put three different types of plants in them. So my lime green was the philodendron lemon lime. Then in the middle, I had philodendron Brazil to kind of bring that lime green into the darker classic jade pothos. And Plant Friends, I can't tell you how happy my plants have been. So I did this install a year ago, and in the last year, the plants have grown beautifully over these planters, creating this unbelievable ombre look that has us so happy. We absolutely love it in our apartment. You can check out my Instagram for before and after pictures, and you can also check out the YouTube video that I released this week on the YouTube channel titled Wally Grow Update that shows you exactly how we installed them and how they've grown in the last year. So this is how it works. You go on their website, wallygrow.com, and you choose one of the 12 colors of the Wally Grow Ecos that they have to offer, and you can mix and match, or you could do all white like we did, or all one color. And the kit's delivered right to your door, and the Ecos come with everything you need for installation. And Plant Friends, I can't tell you, the installation is so Easy. It is literally as simple as screwing the wall bracket that comes with the Eco onto the wall with one screw and hanging the Eco on the wall. And I go over this in the YouTube video that I released if you want more information. I would recommend 1 6-inch pot or 2 4-inch pots for the Eco planters. They don't need more plants than that because the plants are going to grow into them. And you can either pot your plants up in the Eco planters the way I did, or you can use them as almost vertical storage or vertical cash pose. And you can put 4-inch pots of plants inside, like a nursery pot, inside the Wally Grow planters to create the desired green wall effect. And when you're potting them up, if you are potting them up in the planters, only use the designated water reservoir. It's a very fancy design that's won tons of awards. And as long as you use the water reservoir, you're going to conserve water and also you won't be staining anything. We haven't had any issues in the year as long as we've been using our water reservoir. Their design is also so smart that they have aerated holes on the front pocket, which actually allows soil to aerate naturally. And honestly, plant friends, the proof is in the pudding. My plants are so happy. I can't put into words how happy my plants have been in the last year. The design of the Ecos really works. We were kind of unsure when we were installing them. And man, oh man, we have just been so impressed and so in love. And on top of that, all of the Eco planters are made entirely from recycled plastic and they are made in the USA. This company has a huge sustainability commitment. I love the Wally Grow product and I love the people that run Wally Grow. So if you are interested in building the green wall of your dreams, plant friends, like I have my green wall of my dreams now, they have indoor and outdoor options. So go over, visit wallygrow.com and you can use the code BLOOM20 for 20% off. So once again, use the code BLOOM20 at checkout for 20% off the green wall of your dreams with Wally Grow. Welcome back, Leslie. So happy to have you back again.
Again, we just look for excuses to talk to one another. You know what? This is what that's all about.
I know. And I feel like for some of the guys that come on the show, I have fun names for them. Like I need like a planty name for you. Like you're my botanical babe or something.
A moniker. I need my own special Bloom and Grow Radio moniker. I'll think about what I would like to be called.
Yeah.
And I'll get back to you on that.
We'll announce it in our next interview.
Right. May I be Her Highness of Horticulture?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Your Highness of Horticulture. So I am noticing like just with the listener questions that I'm getting and also how I'm developing as a plant parent in this kind of season of life and also this season of the podcast, I am noticing the topics of the episodes and also just like where my brain goes is leaving Fiddly Fig Care 101 and starting to go into what is happening in the leaf of a plant. Or like I feel like I'm zooming out a lot and I want to understand what soil is and I want to understand what photosynthesis is and light and stuff like that, because I feel like when we can have these general ideas of plant care, then we can take that and distill it for all of our individual plants. And we get all these amazing tropical foliage plants. We're looking at their leaves. They're so beautiful. But what's going on underneath the soil is most, I think, of why the plant is successful. I mean, we talk about how root rot is like the main plant killer out there. So I'm so excited to dive into what's going on underneath the soil with you today.
Yeah, so I think that that's a common phenomenon. Anytime you latch on to a new hobby or passion or interest, right? Initially, it might be aesthetics, you know, it's very surface. And that's how houseplant addictions often start. And then once you get into the mechanics of actually growing the plants, you start running into stumbling blocks. And then you realize, wow, I actually need to learn a little bit of botany 101 to figure out what is going on with my plants. And that's where you are. And I would say you're actually zooming in to specialized processes that are going on with plants so that you can better learn why they are doing the things they are doing, you know, in your home or in your garden. And that requires learning a little bit of botany. And I love talking botany with houseplant enthusiasts and home gardeners because I love distilling science into actionable tasks, if you will, when it comes to the hobby gardener.
Yeah, totally. And like with our episodes together on understanding natural light, I feel like after those episodes, like, yes, of course, when I get a plant and I bring it home, like I Google it and I look at the plant care card, But also I feel like now I know so many cues and so many things that I can look at the plant and better understand where I'm supposed to put it. And if it's a succulent type looking plant, or if it's, you know, looking at the leaves, or just getting a better understanding of what bright and direct light really means. I feel like it just makes overall plant care so much easier and so much less stressful than feeling overwhelmed with like individual needs for like each specific plant, if you know what I mean.
Sure. There are fundamental botanical physiological processes that are common to most plants. And so getting a fundamental understanding of things like that will help you with all of your plants, right? And mm-hmm. I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a foundation of knowledge. And that's what learning a little bit of botany and what I like to call rootology, which I think is what we are going to deep dive into today, because that is what a lot of houseplant keepers struggle with, is really what's going on in the root zone. And that's what a lot of new plant keepers really are not thinking about. You're so focused on what's going on above the soil line, right? With the leaves and the top growth, that it's easy to not realize that all of the things you may be seeing going on may actually have to do with what's going on beneath the soil in the root zone that are making your plant happy or not happy.
Absolutely. So as you said, I'm here for knowledge. So give me your knowledge. So let's just start with, what is a root system and why is it important to a plant?
Sure. So unlike your stems and leaves and the green tissue that grows above the soil, generally roots are part of the plant structure that most of the time grows underneath the soil and has a few different functions. First off, it is there to anchor the plant, to keep it in place, right? To give it stability and anchor it in the soil or wherever it's growing. So that's kind of function number one. And then beyond that, of course, the root system's job is to absorb gases like oxygen and water and dissolved minerals from the soil to take into the plant and move up into the rest of the plant system. So anchor structural support and absorption of water, air, and minerals so that the plant can photosynthesize, right? Those are the primary functions of a root system. And there are a lot of different types of root, you know, pieces and parts that do that, but those are the primary functions. So most of the time, but not always, they're beneath the soil, but we'll get into some of the types of roots that maybe aren't under the soil as we get into our conversation.
So with anchoring, that just brings up, I feel like when we get houseplants and we're like potting up a houseplant and they say like you really have to kind of pack the soil down, that's because the roots need that support and kind of structure to anchor themselves to allow the plant to stand up, basically. So that's why packing the soil down is so important.
Well, initially you're transplanting that plant and you're usually transplanting it into a container that's a little bit larger, right, than the container than it was in before. And that root system has yet to sort of latch on to those additional soil particles. So it may rock back and forth a little bit and have more trouble developing a happy new root system. And so, you know, there is a trick to securing that soil or packing it down a little, but not packing it down too much, because we're going to talk a lot about oxygen in the soil and why that's so important to root systems. And if you pack your soil too densely, you are actually limiting the airspace in the soil. So it's a happy medium of tucking it in. I like to call it, you're tucking your plant into its new pot without, yeah, tuck it in, but don't smash, you don't smother it, right? When you tuck your niece or nephew in, you're not going to take the blanket and shove it over their face and tuck it under, right? You're gonna gently, you know, bring those blankets up to where they need to be to feel safe and comfortable, but you're not gonna squish them. It's the same thing with plants. You're gonna tuck them in. And so when you grow a seed, so we'll talk a little bit about some root parts while we're talking about anchoring. When you grow something from a seed, that first root organ that's going to grow and develop when that seed germinates is called the radical. And that essentially, the job of that radical is to anchor that seedling. That's what it's going to do first. So it's the thing that's going to grow straight down into the soil and in certain types of plants become what we call a taproot, sort of the main structural organ. So carrots and beets have taproots that develop into bigger food storage organs, but that's what you think of when you think of a taproot. In fibrous plants like grasses, they don't have taproots. They just grow a smaller fibrous root system, but still it's going to grow far and wide and really anchor that plant. So those are the first thing that's going to grow is that radical. And that really is what's going to sort of hold that plant and seedling in place. but there's not a lot of other root tissue yet that exists to take up nutrients and water. And so that's why when you're growing seedlings, we say you have to really wait until that seedling has grown enough of a surrounding root system before you try to transplant it. Because if you damage that initial radical, your seedling's going to die. You know, that's really important. So certainly structure, anchoring is really important. And there's other types of roots besides those first roots that grow under the ground that help anchor plants to either the soil or to other structures around them.
Right. And before we get into that, in all the different roots we're going to talk about, can we talk just a little bit more about, you also said that it's like main job is to absorb the gases, the dissolved minerals. Number one, how are they like absorbing it? And what are they absorbing primarily?
Right. Essentially, I'm going to take you back to two important words in botany, photosynthesis and respiration. So photosynthesis is the thing that happens in the green part of the plants where there's chlorophyll, stem, tissue, leaves, where the plant will combine sunlight, water taken up by the roots, and carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, maybe a little bit of carbon dioxide from the soil, and combine those things to produce sugars and starches, right? The food of the plant. How does that plant get water and oxygen that it needs to do what we call respiration? Respiration is essentially the breakdown of that food to make energy. So when we often hear the word respiration, we think breathing, but in plants, respiration is actually like sort digesting. Of like the metabolism of breaking down the food you eat, right? To generate calories for energy. The plants are taking in CO2, carbon dioxide, from the air. But what needs to be taken up at the root zone is free oxygen, O2. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not what's in the air and not what's in water, HO2, because that's a really tough bond to break, right? So the plants actually need at the root zone to take up both water, H2O, and separate from water, they need free oxygen, O2, right? So they need to take up both of those things through the root system. And the way the roots do that in certain parts of the root, and well, not all parts of the root do this, so we can get into that a little bit later if you want to, the different pieces and parts of root tissue and what they do. But that happens through what we call osmosis. And I don't know if you remember seventh grade biology class or what osmosis is, but to make it really simple, osmosis is molecules within a solvent or water moving from one area of higher concentration through a permeable membrane, which is the epidermis of your root zone, into an area of lower concentration. It does not require any energy on the plant part of the root tissue to make that water or oxygen move back and forth. It's just that these things are going to naturally go from an area of higher concentration to lower concentration. So they will balance themselves out, if you will, on either side of that permeable membrane, which is the epidermis of your root. If there's more oxygen and water on the outside of the root than there is inside of the root, it's going to naturally pass through that epidermis through osmosis. Basically, right? That's
it's just going to flow on through.
So if you had something that was perforated, right, and you're filling it up with water, right, that water is just going to flow through to the other side of that, and it's going to make an even level. And that's what osmosis is. So your root's job primarily is to be there to anchor the plant and to naturally, through osmosis, absorb water and free oxygen and dissolved minerals that are just going to naturally move into that root zone. Osmosis in itself creates a little bit of what we call root pressure, which will partially and naturally drive the water, oxygen, and dissolved minerals up into the plant. Transpiration, which happens through gas and water exchange of the pores on the surface of the leaf, will do the rest of the job by pulling it up through the rest of the plant through the vascular tissue. So that's really the root's job. The root's job are to hold the plant in place where it wants to be, and then through osmosis, absorb into the root system up into the plant.
And we just did a great episode on hydroponic gardening, and we talked about the importance of getting that bubbler in the water so there is the presence of oxygen for the root to absorb. And what about, okay, what's a root hair?
So that sort of leads us into what I would call the morphology of root tissue, or sort of the different pieces and parts, because a root is not the same all the way along the root. A root, you know, like your arm. If you look at your arm has different pieces and parts. It has elbows, it has a wrist, it has a hand, it has knuckles. Your roots are of your plant are similar. So there's mm-hmm. different pieces and parts of your root tissue that are important. And that very tip of the root that comes off of that radicle is that seed is germinating, or that root is growing off of your tropical plant. The very tip of that root at the base is called the root cap. And that's sort of a protective tissue that helps that root push down into the soil. And another cool thing it does is secrete, for lack of a if we want to keep it simple, slime. it secretes a slime to, what I say, lubricate the movement of that root through the soil. So that's kind of cool. So that's going to, you know, protect the root, lubricate, and push down into the soil. And that's for anchoring purposes, right? And then right behind that little root cap is what we call the apical meristem. And that is where the root tissue makes all its new root cells. The new root cells divide and it makes new cells, and then it elongates. So that's where that root is elongating. So right behind the apical meristem, you have what we call an elongation zone. And then right above that, we have what we call the maturation zone. And that is the part of the root that will differentiate into different pieces and parts. The lateral root tissue that starts to grow sideways instead of straight down, and root hairs that grow off of those roots that are really good. Those are your feeder roots. Those are the parts of the roots that are going to absorb your water, your oxygen, and your dissolved minerals. So those are the main parts of your root tissue. They do different things, and they're not all able to do the same thing. That makes sense.
I'm like giddy right now. This is like so fun. It's just like,
you texted me and you said, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this conversation. And I said, oh gosh, I got to make some coffee because I got to dig into my botany brain and remember all of this stuff for Maria, or she's going to be so disappointed.
It's just like, this is so awesome. How many times have we all just looked, you know, repotted a plant and looked at the roots and noticed the little hairs and the tip and all of it and just not known? And how cool that we know now. Yes. Okay.
So they're very important. They are all equally important, but they do very different things. And so, yeah, the more you know.
The more you know. So you've got the slimy root cap digging through the soil. You've got the apical meristem, which is the thing that's actually pushing that cap farther and farther into the soil by expanding.
It's making
more cells. Elongating. Yeah. And then you've got the maturation zone, which is where the root hairs are. And so the hairs are basically just a part of the root system to help absorb that oxygen and H2O.
Those are essentially feeder roots.
Feeder roots.
Want to call them.
They're
that.
Like baby little roots. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, they expand the surface area, right? So lots of those tiny areas, if you're thinking about it, osmosis requires surface area. Mm-hmm. And the more surface area there is, the more of that osmosis and exchange of water and oxygen that can happen. So the reason why it's making lots of extra little lateral roots and all those additional little root hairs is that it's increasing the surface area of the overall root system feeder area. Does that make sense?
Yes. Amazing. So now we know what this root system is. So I guess most of the roots are going to be in soil or potting medium. And obviously, that potting medium, growing media, is going to get water. So how does the water and the soil affect the roots, and why is that important, having the right potting medium, or, you know, the right water, you know, filtered water or whatever?
That's a really big topic. Let me try to break it down as simple as I can for you. So remember how I said that roots need access to free oxygen, O2, right? Not just the oxygen that's bound up to hydrogen molecules in water. They need oxygen. And when you think about soil or potting mix that you're growing in, what you have is a big collection of particles, soil particles, but they're not all tight, right? There are what we call pores in the soil, lots of pores. And in those pores are where the oxygen lives. So when you hear constantly that your plants need good drainage, right?
Like an airy, they need an airy potting mix. That's what everybody says.
Right. And so the reason why your plants need good drainage is so that there are more pores between the soil particles, which allow space for the root system to grow, number one, mm-hmm. right? Because that's what the root system is doing, but it also creates pockets of air. So the tighter that soil, depending on its composition outside, or the tighter the pack of that potting soil that you're using indoors, the less pore space there is. The less pore space there is, the less oxygen there is, right? Mm. And the higher the water holding capacity sometimes, right? So if there are less pores, which allow water to move freely through that soil, then it's going to do what? It's going to sit there and suffocate your root system, right? So just because there's oxygen in H2O, it doesn't mean that the plant can use that in the way that it needs to use free oxygen. So you have to have space for water. You have to have space for air. But you also have to realize that different plants are endemic to different places around the world, different soil conditions, different environments, right? So some plants are adapted to mm-hmm. heavier, like let's say clay soils, right? That have much, much smaller soil particles and thus much fewer air spaces or pores between those soil particles. So it holds more water and has less oxygen mm-hmm. in the soil. Some plants are adapted to that, right? Because their root tissue has adapted to be able to do a better job of capturing oxygen other ways, which we'll talk about. But most of the plants that you're growing, okay, are going to need a potting mix that isn't going to suffocate your roots. And that's where root rot comes into play. That's why when you buy inert potting mixes, right, for houseplants, you'll see things like perlite or vermiculite mixed into that potting mix. And those are there to help create places for roots to latch onto and create air pockets in the soil so that the soil is looser, water can move more freely through it, and you get more oxygen available to the root system in the soil.
Oh my God, wait. So is root rot when there's too much water and not enough oxygen and so the roots like suffocate?
Yes, in conjunction with microbial activity. So certain pathogens that will thrive in less aerobic conditions. Essentially, yes, but there are a lot of factors that contribute to that.
So sad.
Sometimes root rot is a simple factor of suffocation, right? There's too much mm-hmm. water, not enough air, and the roots can't pull
in. It's drowning.
They're suffocating and drowning. And then you throw in soil pathogens that thrive in less aerobic conditions, and then you may have root rot in conjunction with a disease pathogen.
Like literally rotten.
Correct. Like, you know, Phytophthora is and Fusarium are very common soil-borne root rot pathogens that kill a lot of plants out in the garden like that, but can also be an issue in soils inside that have organic matter that will thrive when soils get too wet or too dry.
So, and on the topic of root rot, why don't we talk about what a healthy root looks like and what a rotten root looks like? Because I've had people write me with like photos of their roots being like, is this root rot or not?
Right. So normally, and again, this will vary for different types of plants, right? And it will also mm-hmm. vary as to based on what's in that soil mix. So sometimes there can be some just discoloration or tinting of roots, you know, that are fine, that are healthy, but, you know, depending on what's in the soil mix, they might look a little discolored. But normally a healthy root is going to be a whitish color, nice and firm. It's not going to be slimy. You're not going to see brown, you know, areas or lesions on it. Mm-hmm. Okay. But once those roots start to get, you know, if you see any mushiness, if you see them turning a dark brown color, if you see, you know, spots or discoloration or lesions, then you need more oxygen to that root system, or you may also have a soil pathogen, which you probably talked a little bit about in your hydroponics podcast. I'm not sure if you did or not, but you can also have pathogens that occur just in a straight hydroponic water system too. So you're constantly battling that balance of oxygen to the root zone. So a nice white, firm, fleshy root is going to be healthy. But once you start seeing discoloration and brown or any sliminess come into play, you've got an imbalance going on.
Okay. And we'll talk about troubleshooting root rot at the end of the episode. Because before that, I want to get into what are the different types of roots? Because now in my collection of 120 plants, I feel like I kind of thought that all plants had the same roots. But then when I was repotting my snake plants, I was like, oh, these look really different than my philodendron roots. So why don't we break down, or why don't you break down, please, the different root structures that we can expect? Okay.
There are actually lots of different kinds of roots and lots of different kinds of root structures, but I'm going to try to keep it surface, no pun intended here. So real quick to jump back to monocots and dicots, two different types of plants. So when you grow a seed, a monocot will have either one little cotyledon or it will have two. If it's a monocot, it will have one, like corn or grasses. If it's a dicot, like many trees and many of the plants that you grow, it will have two cotyledons. And so, you know, dicots.
And the cotyledon, is that the first set of leaves that come out of the ground?
Yeah, they're not leaves. It's basically the seed coat. So they look like little leaves, but that was protecting the seed coat. And then once those drop off, then you have the first set of true leaves that come after that. Okay.
You have a great diagram in Plant Parenthood.
Yes. So if you're interested in that, if you jump into my book, Plant Parenting, I actually diagram all of that out for you so you can see the morphology there. So dicots are going to have a taproot. Monocots will not. They will have fibrous roots. So there are very different root systems that exist between different types of plants, just at a base level. And then the question you're asking me is actually what I call root modifications. So what we just talked about before this was your primary root system tissue, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to talk about how does root tissue modify into sort of different things or different places, right?
Okay.
Right. And that's going to apply to a lot of your tropicals. And I think the first thing that we'll talk about are what we call adventitious roots. Adventitious roots are any other kind of root structure that develops on other parts of the plant, not from that initial root radical or the main root system. Okay. So if it is a root coming off of a stem, like on a Monstera,
mm-hmm. or if like an aerial root.
Aerial roots are adventitious roots.
Okay.
So there are other kinds of adventitious roots. So at a base level, adventitious roots are roots that develop someplace other on the plant than from the primary radical or main root system. So usually these are monocots, like, you know, corn or tomatoes are a great example. If you've ever grown tomatoes and you see those little nubby knobs, I have a good picture of that in my book, Gardening Under Lights, where you can see these little knobs developing root initials on the stem of the plant. And then those will grow out and grow down to support the plant. So adventitious roots can also develop into food storage. Like a taproot will develop into a bulkier structure like a carrot or a beet. That's a modified root tissue.
So with a tomato plant, that's why you're always coached to plant the tomato lower in the ground than whatever that root ball is, because those roots, those adventitious roots on the stem are going to continue to grow out into the soil.
They provide better support for the plant. So sometimes an adventitious root's function is to buttress that plant. So like in banyan trees, these big tropical trees, those hanging roots that come out from the branches and then go down into the soil at the base of the plant, that's an adventitious aerial root that provides structure, right? Or it latches onto another structure. So say in aerial plants, epiphytes, orchids, tillandsias that don't grow in the soil, they use adventitious aerial roots to anchor themselves to other plants or other structures, right?
Like when you get a moss pole in your pot of your house plant and it climbs up.
So aerial roots that are very common on a lot of the type of plants you probably grow are a type of adventitious root. Mm-hmm. Once they hit the soil, you know, they may start doing other things, right? Like taking up dissolved minerals and things. You know, when they're aerial, they're taking in air and water from the air, right? But they exist to buttress and secure the plant, right? Because that plant has a main root system already that's doing most of the job, right? Except in your epiphytes, which rely completely on their aerial roots for absorption of oxygen and water.
We had that conversation. I was texting you about my Monstera repotting, which I was so stressed about, but it's on YouTube. My meltdown is on YouTube, available
for
anyone.
I have to watch it. I haven't seen it
yet. Yeah, but we were talking about whether or not you repot the aerial roots. And as I was repotting the Monsteras, I noticed that some aerial roots actually snuck themselves into the soil, even without me tucking them in, and grew way deep into the pot and had all sorts of root offshoots coming out of it. It was a really interesting learning experience.
Yeah, you were asking me if it was okay if you trimmed any of those aerial adventitious roots. And I said, sure. the plant has a primary root system, right, that's going into the soil. And then it has all those stringy aerial adventitious roots coming off of the stem. And they're looking for things to latch onto. Right. And then some of them will grow naturally straight down to hit the soil to further buttress that plant. But you can prune off adventitious aerial roots without killing your plant.
Okay.
And usually with no effect, right? It's usually not going to have any detrimental effect. So they're there as extra support roots, right? And then there are other types of adventitious roots that aid in respiration and oxygen. So there's some kind of really cool plants that are native to swamp areas like mangroves that have special types of root modification that are snorkel tubes that come out and take up oxygen from the air and send it to the root system. So there are other kinds of modified roots that do other things for the plant in addition to its primary root system. And aerial roots are a very common type of adventitious root.
All right. So those are adventitious. You heard it here first about those adventitious roots, what to do with aerial roots.
Thank you, Plants by Post, for supporting today's episode. So plant friends, Plants by Post is one of my new favorite ways to acquire plants, whether it's for myself or for gifts. So Plants by Post is a family-owned nursery in Northern California that is cutting out the middleman, and they are shipping high-quality indoor and outdoor annuals, perennials, and most importantly, houseplants directly to your door nationwide. I've received two separate shipments of plants from Plants by Post, and I gotta say, each time the plants have arrived in amazing shape and the packaging is so on point. Plants by Post has an amazing selection of houseplants right now on their website. I've got my eye on their Ficus Audrey. They also have the Sansevieria Moonshine, which I recently acquired from them, and other beautiful plants like Peperomia Ginny, along with all of our favorite hardy plants. Their website is so easy to navigate, and now they actually just updated their website where you can mix and match pots on a plant. So you go, you navigate their website, you pick the plant you want to get, like the Ficus Audrey, and then you can, based on your design aesthetic, choose from a selection of pots. So our pots are all white or terracotta. So I got the white weave style, but they have various colors to choose from, even this beautiful marble one that I really like. And because the pots are cash pose, meaning they don't have any drainage, the plants come in their nursery pot slipped into the cash pot, which I really appreciate because it helps you not overwater your plants. So, my plant friends, this holiday season, gift someone you love with a beautiful potted plant in a gorgeous planter from Plants by Post. This is going to be the gift that obviously keeps on giving. Whether you're sending it directly to them and their house, or whether you order the plants to your home to then distribute as gifts, Plants by Post is your answer. Last year, I gifted my sister a starter Urban Jungle because she was really interested in plants after I started getting interested in them. And I gave her a couple of cuttings from my collection and several fully grown plants. I ordered them online to my apartment and then gifted them to her on Christmas. So maybe you can gift someone their starter Urban Jungle using Plants by Post. If you're interested in checking out what their packaging looks like, I've done unboxings of their plants in two different videos on my YouTube channel, the most recent gift guide episode and the home makeover episode. I also love that Plants by Post is environmentally friendly and they are MPS certified, which is a fancy certification, which means that they submit their energy, water, chemical fertilizer, and recycling practices to a third-party certification every month to make sure that they are keeping the utmost standards for sustainability and being environmentally friendly, which we can all appreciate. So they are offering the Bloom and Grow Radio listeners 20% off through the rest of 2019. So definitely go check them out, plantsbypost.com, and use the code BLOOM19 for 20% off. Once again, use the code BLOOM19 for 20% off plants and pots at plantsbypost.com.
So what's the name of like our general roots like that my philodendrons have? Like they're just juicy white roots. They kind of all are like similar sized, like your general root that you're going to see in most tropical houseplants.
That's just your main root system. So that's your primary root system, okay, that was generated from that original seed or the original piece of cutting, okay? So that's your primary structural root system, right? It's not adventitious. It's growing in the normal, quote-unquote, normal root zone.
Is it called fibrous? Is that what a fibrous root system is?
Well, you have plants that have a tap root type of root zone. And those are those are dicots.
Okay.
And fibrous root systems belong to monocots.
Okay.
I also define those for you in plant parenting so you guys can look up the difference. But like corn and grasses are monocots. So they're going to have a fibrous root system. Dicots will have a radical that will have sort of one, you know, main taproot, but then you're going to have all the lateral roots that grow off of it. Mm-hmm. So you may or may not notice that taproot structure on your plant, or you may.
So taproot is like the one root that goes all the way down to the soil to anchor the plant, or like that's what it is. It's like instead of a lot of like the gesture I'm doing with my hands right now is like spirit fingers. It's not like, so obviously those listening, that's no help to you. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you've got, the difference is like the normal root system has like a lot of roots reaching out into the soil in different directions to anchor it, and that are shorter, and a taproot is going to be much deeper and go all the way down into the soil to like root the plant. And it doesn't have a lot of those like big offshoots.
Well, all the offshoots, the lateral roots are going to come off of that taproot. A taproot is what develops from the radical, the very first organ that comes out of that seed.
Okay.
And goes downward. That becomes the taproot. And then right in that zone of maturation, that taproot is then going to start developing all of the other secondary root growth, which grows sideways, and then all the root hairs off of that. So they're both going to have that. It's just not all plants have taproots.
Okay.
A carrot is a type of plant that has a taproot. A pecan tree has a taproot. So if you grow a carrot from seed, the seed's going to germinate. That radical is going to grow and go down into the soil to anchor it. And then over time, that root tissue can become modified. It doesn't happen in all plants, as a food storage organ. Not all taproots are food storage organs, but in plants, for example, like carrots or beets, that is modified taproot tissue that then stores lots of food for that plant.
So it's storing food basically. Yes. So a carrot is when it becomes that food storage, it's storing food for the carrot greens that are living above the soil, right?
Correct.
So it's so funny. I don't know why, like it hit me like earlier today when I was prepping for this interview, I was like, oh, right. Like root vegetables that we talk about and cook and roast and get from our CSA, like those are taproots. And it's so interesting that we know the carrot as its root, but really a carrot has developed for the greens that are living above the soil. That's just kind of a wacky thing to think about.
That's what every root system does. So like when you look at a tree, a lot of times more of the actual structure of that plant is in the root system underground. It might even be bigger than what you're seeing. So not all food storage organs are taproots. Some of them are tubers or rhizomes or corms, and those are actually not root tissue. They are modified stem tissue.
Okay, yes. So let's talk about this, because this is like basically the reason why I wanted to do this episode with you. I inherited all these snake plants from a friend, and they were like exploding out of my pot. So I finally was like, great, I'll take the snake plants out of the pot. And I'll just like repop, like I'll just split them up. Everybody says you can just divide snake plants. And I was like, what the hell is going on under the soil in these plants? It looks so different than like all of the other just normal, like general root systems I was looking at. And that's where I learned the word rhizome.
Yeah.
And then through more research, I learned that it is indeed not a root, but like, what is a rhizome? And do we need to think about, if we are dividing plants, like how do we treat a rhizome?
Sure. So I actually have a fun little chapter in plant parenting in my book on page 187 called Underground Propagules. And I'm so happy that I got to keep that vocabulary word in the book. Let me take it out because I love the word propagules. So a big difference between root tissue and stem tissue is that stem tissue has leaf scars or leaf buds, where you're going to get that new shoot that grows. Most root tissue does not have that. There are plants that have developed what we call modified stem tissue. So like an aerial root, is modified root tissue. It's a modified type of root. Stem tissue can also differentiate into other propagatable structures. And a rhizome and a corm and a tuber, those are what we call modified stem tissue. So they will grow differently, often underground or right at the surface of the soil. And it's a way for that plant to reproduce or multiply via clumping, right? Mm-hmm. So that a rhizome may kind of look like a big thick root to you, and a Sansevieria or snake plant's a good example. And I actually have in plant parenting a step-by-step of how to divide and propagate those rhizomes, but they're not roots. They kind of look like roots, but like stem tissue, they have leaf scars and leaf buds. So they can differentiate into a new shoot and develop new roots. So when you pull that soil away from the base of that snake plant, you see these kind of crazy sort of half white, really thick looking root structures growing sideways away from the plant. And eventually what's going to happen is a new leaf bud is going to sprout a new bud shoot, and it's going to come up from out of the ground. So it just keeps, it multiplies. That's how that plant is multiplying. So it looks like a root, but it's really a modified stem tissue because it has the ability to grow new shoots.
So does it also have the ability to grow roots?
Yes, it can grow both. So you can cut that away. You can cut that rhizome away from the main mother plant and propagate it and grow a whole new plant.
Yeah, man. That's cool.
Rhizomes are a form of modified stem tissue that may grow underground. They're not a root. They are modified stem tissue that has the ability to grow new bud shoots and new roots.
What about now caladiums, I feel like, are kind of a hot topic in houseplants
right now. Yeah, they are, which is really kind of funny to me.
Now they're a bulb, right?
Well, they are a tuber.
A tuber. Okay, so let's talk about tubers.
Yeah, so you have tubers are another type of modified stem tissue that has the ability to grow new shoots and roots. So it looks like a knobby little knuckly structure, right? That when you plant it under the soil, it will grow new roots and shoots. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, caladiums, you know, as a horticulturist, you know, caladiums are something we plant a lot outside in the outside garden. But lately, especially pink caladiums have been having a houseplant moment. The one thing I will caution you about is that a lot of times caladiums have a dormancy period, and they'll have a 24 to 26 week active growing period, and then they're just going to go dormant. So that I have a feeling that there are going to be some sort of new houseplant keeper caladium freakouts on the horizon.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go dormant and you're going to think you killed it, and you're going to keep watering it, and then you're going to rot it. When in fact, what you need to do is let it go dry, let it be dormant over the winter, and then start watering it again in late spring.
And do you just take it, like, you, it doesn't need light. Like, can you just put it
in the closet?
In a closet and then just take it out in the summer. Yeah, that was one of my, a plant fail I'm like still traumatized from. I bought, it was like way before I knew any of this, but I brought a caladium home. I had like bought it at a nursery. I had no idea what it was. And I, number one, actually put it in low light, thinking it was bright indirect light. This was before you and I knew each other. And it all died. And also, I feel like caladiums freak me out, and some other aroids freak me out, where it's like a really big leaf and a really skinny stem. I just don't understand. Yes. Like, I don't understand how they stand up.
Does not compute how this is going to stand up.
And then the caladium died back, and obviously, like, all the leaves toppled over, and I couldn't. And I tried watering it thinking it would like bounce back. Right? I made it worse.
This is a predictable scenario. Yeah. And I'm waiting for the caladium freakouts to start happening on Instagram.
I know.
You know, it's very similar to an amaryllis bulb that's forced for indoors that you see at the holidays. They also have a summer dormancy period. And bulbs.
I love a bulb. I love a forced bulb in the wind. I love an amaryllis or a paper white.
I do too. I'm actually a bulb freak. I love bulbs. I plant a ton of them outside. I love to force them inside, but bulbs are actually modified leaf tissue.
Oh, interesting.
True bulbs are actually modified leaf tissue.
So they're not
tissue.
Tubers.
So those are not also roots.
Oh my God.
No. And then you also have corms, which if you've ever grown crocus, those come from a corm, which is also another type of modified stem tissue. So all of those sort of what I call underground propagules are mostly modified stem tissue because they have the ability to grow both new bud shoots and roots.
Got it.
And that is unique to most of the time to stem tissue.
You're blowing my mind, Leslie.
And I have all of that.
It's all in the
detailed
book.
Out in that. It's all in plant parenting. So I go step by step with you and I show you how to do some really cool propagation with them.
Yeah.
Too.
And it's all very clear. I looked at the book today to prep for this interview and I was like, oh yeah, this is like really clearly broken down for someone like me who like just doesn't know any of this.
Well, and I feel like, you know, having been in this a long time, you know, and having kind of run all of my plant obsessions, you know, I've been through every one of them over and over again. I mean, I've done everything, but I feel like that bulbs are not there yet. But I feel like indoor bulbs are going to be an upcoming indoor plant.
Yeah, trend. I'm into it.
I'm going to have to teach everybody how to do this because it's so cool. But yeah, that's modified leaf tissue.
I'm into that. I'm into bulbs. And also you and I have talked about how we're so into African violets having a comeback.
Oh my gosh. I have the most beautiful. Yeah, they're really, and I am actually in the process of kickstarting a whole new collection of African violets because I'm re-obsessed. So
you heard it here first, plant friends. Leslie and I are making it happen. Fetch is, it's happening. We're trying to make Fetch a thing.
We're going to make it happen.
Yeah.
I'm not really, I don't really respond to plant trends.
We got to set them.
I feel like, you know, it's my job to make that, right? That's my job.
Exactly. Okay, wait, I have so many more questions for you.
Okay.
So root repotting, I feel like people kind of feel differently about when you're potting up a plant or when you get the plant home from the nursery, you're putting it in a pot. You take the plant out of the pot, the roots are going to be, even if it's not root bound, you're going to note pot bound, you're going to notice the roots maybe are starting to grow in a circle. How much massaging of the bottom of that plant to set the quote unquote set the roots free do you do? And is it okay if you have to break some roots in order to get them out of that concentric circle growth?
So this is one of those things that really freaks out new gardeners and new plant keepers. And when you watch me repot something, depending on what it is, I will freak you out because I am way rougher. But that comes with years and years of hands-on experience and being a professional and understanding what you can get away with and what you can't. It is different for every species of plant. Depending on the type of root system that they grow, it is different for every age of the plant. And as you well know, there's a lot of variation in terms of how much the root system is grown into that pot when you transplant it. Sometimes you will be replanting a new pot and you pull it out and there aren't any roots to the bottom of the pot, right? Half of the soil falls away. And what you realize is you have a much smaller root system. So the reality is in that situation, that plant was really not ready to transplant. It doesn't have a big enough root system. Whereas you might buy something that's a really aggressive grower, like a Sansevieria. Snake plants are a perfect example that put off a lot of rhizomes and have really dense, thick, fleshy root system that will girdle. And so what we call when the root system is too big for the pot and it starts growing around in a circle, we call that girdling. And roots that are girdling will often continue to grow that way when you transplant them, suffocating the root system if you don't do some root pruning or loosen up, like you said, massage the base of the root system. But with Sansevieria, massaging is not going to do it. Sometimes you're going to have to get downright brutal. And so when you see me repot a Sansevieria, you'll probably gasp. Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I will bash that pot against the counter. I will break, you know, so you can literally just rip that apart with your hands or use a knife. You've got to loosen those roots up and you have to break them out of their circular wrapping placement when you repot them. But you're not going to do that with an African violet. An African violet's root system is going to be much more delicate and will break much more easily. And you can also damage the crown of the plant much more easily. So it totally depends on the type of plant you're repotting.
I feel like you can also tell just by looking at the roots, if they're thicker and juicier and super established, I think you can ascertain that. I think if that's the right use of that word, like you can figure out that you can be a little rougher, but with an African violet or like, you know, a fresh petiole cutting of a peperomia where those roots are like so delicate, obviously you got to be a little bit more. But also what about, I've heard people say that when you break the roots to repot, it actually is going to trigger the roots to grow more, which is good for the plant. Is that true?
It depends. So when you go back to the basic root morphology, remember you have different zones on that root. You have the root cap, you have the apical meristem, you have the elongation mm-hmm. zone, and then you have the zone of maturation. Mm-hmm. So what happens, and we've talked about this before, I think, like when you take a tip cutting off of the plant, you do what's called removing apical dominance. You have no leader anymore, right? So that the tip of that shoot and the tip of the root is what is responsible for making that shoot continue to grow up or make that root grow down. Once you cut that root, it begins to grow differently. And you need another secondary root to sort of take over as that apical dominant structure to be able to grow down again and anchor that plant. So yes, so when you cut off a tip of a plant or you cut off the growing tip of a root, you're left with lateral growth or lateral growth stimulation. And another root or another shoot is going to then take over that apical dominance, which is controlled by hormones. Once that meristematic tissue is removed, hormones go around the plant and say, ah, we lost our leader, and another shoot or root needs to take over that role of dominance. So yeah, so root pruning or tip pruning will encourage lateral shoot or lateral root development. Okay. Does that yes. make sense? But if you damage too much of that root system, you can go too far.
Okay.
And you can make it not possible for that plant to really have enough of a root system to be able to heal and regrow before that plant kicks the bucket. And oftentimes why, if you have to do a lot of root pruning or a lot of the root system is damaged on a plant, or you might cut off some of the top growth or remove leaves to reduce the burden that that root system has to feed at the top of that plant. Right? You have to balance it out and compensate.
Sorry. So say that again. You are going to prune the top of the leaf, the top of the plant.
So if you have a lot of damage to a root mm-hmm. system, or maybe let's say you have a plant that has been overwatered for too long and you pull it out of the pot and you're like, oh my gosh, there's barely, you know, most of the roots have gone brown and slimy mm-hmm. and have been, you know, just fall away. The first thing I'm going to do is prune off a good portion of the top growth of that plant. I'm going to cut it back. Because there is not enough root tissue there to feed all of that top growth.
Got it. And then the plant can focus on the roots.
Right. So there has to be enough of a root system to support all that top growth. If you prune off too much of that root tissue and all of those root caps, then it's going to take a while for that root system to recover, and it may not be fast enough to keep your plant alive. So sometimes you have to take the drastic action of cutting the top growth back to make it so that plant doesn't have as much top growth to feed, if that makes sense.
Yes.
In a really basic way.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so what about water roots versus soil roots? Because so many of us propagate something in water, then we want to pot it up in soil. So is that okay? What's the difference? What do we need to know there?
There is a difference between what we call soil roots and water roots. And this is a big point of contention for a lot of new plant keepers who try to figure this out. And I get asked a lot about water roots. What's the difference, mm-hmm. you know, from soil roots? So basically, in a healthy soil with a healthy root system, your roots are taking up free oxygen from the soil, right? Everything's mm-hmm. cool. There's enough air pores, there's good drainage, and so there's a good balance of water and oxygen there. When you take a cutting, for example, of a peperomia or philodendron, and you stick it in water to water root it, right? The roots that develop from that cutting, or the roots that might be growing on an aquatic plant that grows naturally in water, will grow a little bit differently because they have to collect water differently. So mm-hmm. water roots will be structurally different from soil roots, and they have more air spaces in them because they have to diffuse oxygen from above the water line, okay, into that root tissue versus available oxygen in the soil. And that can get really complicated, but just to keep it simple, you know, that root will grow in a different way to diffuse oxygen from above the water line in a different way than it has to do in the soil. So what often happens is you've got that cutting growing along in water, and it happens to be in that water for a really long time, right? Because why, you know, the pothos is growing and it's happy in the water. Why transplant it, right? You just get behind, or African violets or whatever. And then after many, many months, you decide, okay, I'm going to pot this cutting up. And you pot it into soil. And what happens a lot of the time?
If it's not like well established, it'll just kind of die.
Well, right. So because now the roots that have been morphologically adapted to taking up oxygen in a different way, you've now put mm-hmm. them in potting soil. And right. now those roots aren't absorbing oxygen the same way. And so it can really stunt that plant once you put mm-hmm. it into a soil or inert growing media. And a lot of people fail with those cuttings. You know, African violets are a good example. If you can easily water root those leaf petiole cuttings, but if you leave them in water too long, that root system, you know, really becomes one that is adapted, taking up oxygen in a very different way. Yeah. So you put it right into soil and it can't function properly. So yes, there is a physiological difference between roots that mature under in soil and have access to free oxygen in the soil and roots that grow in water and have to diffuse oxygen from the air above the water line. There are plants that adapt that grow naturally in water, like a water lily, for example, you know, or mm-hmm. rushes, things that grow. So they're, you know, they have evolved to have a root system that can grow underwater, and algae and other plants are, as a byproduct of photosynthesis, will naturally then put off a bunch of extra oxygen into the water. And those plants are adapted to taking it up that way. And then again, through photosynthesis, they put off more oxygen back into the water. So there are some plants that are naturally adapted to growing in water that can make and recycle their own oxygen, which is really cool. But when you stick, but your African violet can't do that. You know, your African violet can't do that. So
we just keep going back to philodendron or pothos, but say I've water propagated a pothos. It's my first time propagating. I've got like a good inch or two of healthy roots. What's the best way to pot up to not kill that plant in its transition into soil?
So I think that if you are water rooting and that first, you know, root radical, you know, grows down into the water, but you don't have any branching yet, it's too early to transplant it. What you want to do is you want to wait until mm-hmm. that root starts to differentiate and grow lateral secondary roots and root hairs. And once that system is about, you know, an inch to 2 inches long and you have branching, you can transplant it into soil. The problem that occurs is when you leave it there longer than that and it develops a much more extensive root system. Now it's got water roots. And what I would suggest is that if you have a cutting that's been growing for a long time in water, that you do a two-step transplanting process.
Okay.
Before planting it into potting soil or houseplant mix, use something like perlite or vermiculite straight, like almost like you're growing hydroponically, and transplant it into a completely inert material that doesn't have any microorganisms in it.
Okay.
In soil microorganisms, transplant it into, you know, a pot of perlite or vermiculite or something like that.
Or LECA.
Yeah.
We're into the semi-hydro LECA craze right now. Yeah.
Exactly. So do that as a transition and then let it start to grow some new roots and a little bit of new shoot. And then you can transplant it into a more traditional, you know, potting mix or houseplant mix. That. So taking a two-step approach can help you if you've left your water-rooted cuttings in water for too long.
Amazing. I have one more. I've been peppering in some listener questions and Patreon plant friend questions through here. Daniel, one of our Patreon plant friends, wants to know, plants that house nitrogen-fixing bacteria in their roots, is there any special action needed to be taken when growing them in containers?
Excellent question. And yes, there is a right answer to it. So,
oh, great. Tell me, because I don't understand any of it.
Yeah. So this goes back to modified root tissue. So when we talk about, and we call those root nodules, and plants that are legumes that are in the pea family have what we call a symbiotic relationship with certain soil-borne bacteria called rhizobium. And that rhizobium bacteria can actually fix nitrogen from the air.
Okay.
And they basically create little houses, if you will, in those root nodules of the plant. So the rhizobium bacteria that's in the soil can move into those roots in these root nodules. And then it's a symbiotic relationship. So the rhizobium feeds off the plant, and then the rhizobium takes nitrogen from the atmosphere, which is very cool, and absorbs it into the plant. So legumes can essentially, through this symbiotic relationship with rhizobium bacteria, make their own fertilizer, make their own nitrogen fertilizer. They feed themselves. So, but they are reliant on that relationship. So when someone is planting peas for the first time or beans for the first time in their garden or into a container, what I always recommend is that you do at least a first-time application of what we call garden inoculant. and it's a powdered form of rhizobium bacteria. Because it may not, if you're using a potting mix, there isn't going to be any rhizobium bacteria in it. If you're buying sterilized organic compost, it's sterilized. It's going to take a while for that to actually build up microbial activity. It's counterintuitive. You have to inoculate your soil or inoculate your containers to have really happy legumes, peas, beans, you know, anything that's in the pea family would be really happy if you inoculated the soil. So what you're doing is you're introducing that population of beneficial bacteria so that it can move into the roots and then create those root nodules. And then that's why you don't have to fertilize legumes as much, because as long as they have that rhizobium in the soil, they can do a lot of that nitrogen.
Wow. Okay. I had no idea. Thank you, Daniel, for that awesome question.
That's what you'll look for when you go shopping at your local garden center or online. You're going to look for what's called garden inoculant, and you just mix it with water and water it into your container.
I love it. All right, Leslie, you're so awesome. Thank you. What an amazing conversation.
We did not even get into all of it. So, I mean, there's so much rootology we can cover, but hopefully that gives your Bloom and Grow Radio listeners a foundational level of knowledge to help them better understand what's going on with their plants and why underwatering and overwatering and soil mix density is so important to your houseplants.
And where can we find you, and how can we get your book, Plant Parenting, if we want to dive into more of this information?
So you can find me online at lesliehallock.com. I'm also on Instagram at lesliehallock, Hallock Horticultural on Facebook, at Leslie Hallock on Twitter. I get around where I can on social media. And then both of my books, Plant Parenting, which is really a beginner's guide to all things propagating, and Gardening Under Lights, which is indoor gardening, which will also cover a lot of things related to what we talked about today. Both of them are obviously on Amazon. You can get on Amazon and get them. Do check your local bookstore and your local garden center. There are more and more garden centers that are carrying both of the books now. So certainly Amazon or your local bookshop, you can find both of my books. So please do.
All of the ways to find Leslie and both of her books will be linked in the show notes. Leslie, my highness of horticulture.
I love it.
I am so thankful to you. Thank you. Thank you. Until next time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Leslie, you are awesome. She is awesome. If you guys want to learn more about roots, obviously we mentioned her book frequently, Plant Parenting, her book all about propagation. So you can go and check that out. The link is in the show notes. It would make a great gift for you to request, or maybe to gift someone, gift that plant parent in your life. Thank you again to my amazing Patreon plant friends. I love you. Thanks for supporting the show. And thank you to our beautiful, wonderful episode sponsors, Wally Grow and Plants by Post. If you are interested in building the green wall of your dreams, make sure to check out the Wally Grow Eco Planters at wallygrow.com and use the code BLOOM20 for 20% off. And if you're looking for plants to put in that green wall, or if you're looking for plants for a gift this holiday season, order your plants from plantsbypost.com and use the code BLOOM19 for 20% off. My plant friends, I truly wish this holiday season is stress-free for you. I hope it's fun. I hope you remember to keep using your plants as self-care, as stress relief. And I just wish you the most merry holiday season that can be. So I will be back in 2 weeks with another episode for you. So until then, check into the YouTube channel for more content, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind the scenes, sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing.